The Father's love is a real substance. You know, it's stuff. If I have a jug of nothing and an empty glass, and I pour nothing into nothing, I have nothing. And, you know, so often I think we think that's what God's love is like, you know, that nothing is poured into nothing, nothing changes, and we all carry on the same. But actually, the love of the Father is a real substance. And when he pours his love into our hearts, he pours his love into our hearts. And he pours the substance of his love into our hearts. So there is something in him. There is the substance of love, which is God himself. God is love. And he pours that love, the substance, the reality of that love into our hearts. I'm not going to make a mess, don't worry. And our hearts are filled up with the substance, with the reality of his love. You know, it's not a case of pouring nothing into nothing. It's a case of pouring something into nothing so that nothing becomes something. And that's when we read Romans 5, verse 5, where it says, the love of God is poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit. That's what Paul is writing about. Paul is writing about the substance and the reality of the Father's love, the something of the Father's love being poured into the void of our hearts, so that our hearts then contain the same substance that is in the Father's heart. See, God is love. God is love. Everything about God is love. He is the total and complete and perfect image of what love is. And when he pours that love into our hearts, it doesn't go through a transformation from here to here. You know, the perfect, complete expression of love that is in his heart is the perfect and complete expression of love that is poured into our hearts. So that our hearts contain the same love that is in the heart of the Father. It doesn't get diluted. It doesn't get mixed with other stuff. It's the same reality and substance that is in the Father's heart that is poured into our hearts. You know, and what happens then is that the empty vessel of our heart is transformed. Instead of an empty vessel containing nothing, it's a vessel that contains the perfect and complete expression of love. Now, the problem is that our hearts have a whole load of other stuff in them as well. And when God pours his love into our hearts, you know, for a time it mixes with all that other stuff. But the way I see it is, it like it goes down the side of the glass to the bottom of the glass, and then it comes underneath all that other stuff. And as we're filled up with love, all that other stuff just floats off, and we're left with a heart that is filled with love. Now, that's the perfect and ideal world. But you and I all know that stuff happens, or stuff hits the fan, as another expression is, which we won't go into. But, you know, things in life happen that affect us and, you know, drag us down, and we have to cope with them. And, you know, that's the reality of life. You know, it's like we live in a broken, messed up world. And however, you know, much we try to leave our lives rooted and planted in the Father's love, we still live in a broken world. So the stuff in other people's lives affects us. And that's why we need to keep coming back and saying, Father, I need to be filled up with the substance and the reality of your love. Because it is a substance. You know, it's not, he doesn't take a jug of nothing and pour nothing into you. He pours the substance of his love into your hearts through the Holy Spirit. The Passion Translation translates Romans 5 like this. Hope is not a disappointing fantasy, because we can now experience the endless love of God cascading into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who lives in us. We can experience the endless love of God cascading into us. That word cascading is a generous word. It's not a little trickle. It's not like God rations it and says, oh, you know, yeah, you've been a good boy today, you can have a bit. And yeah, you've been a good girl, you can have a bit more, you know. He doesn't ration it. He cascades it freely into our hearts. It's like standing under the Niagara Falls.
It's a bit dangerous.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, it's just that cascade of his love being poured into us. A few years ago, one of our daughters was in Israel for a couple of years, and we went to visit her, and she took us to her church in Jerusalem. And we went to this church, and we were there, and the preacher started preaching, and he started talking about the grace of God. And a lot of what he said was really, really good, and I was enjoying it. And then he said, did you know that the grace of God is limited? So I instantly sat up and I thought, no, it's not. And then I thought, well, maybe he's going to just sort of, you know, lead us to this sort of, it's limited, but God's definition of limited is unlimited. You know, I thought he was going to do a little play on words. And he said, you know, God's grace is limited. And I thought, oh, okay, where are we going with this? And then he said, it's, you know, there's a ration for you, and there's a ration for you, and there's a ration for you. And there's a ration for you. It's like God has given you an allocation of grace. And I'm thinking, okay, I can still go with it. Maybe he's going to play with the words and twist it round. And yes, your allowance is unlimited, you know. And your allowance is unlimited, you know. And I was sitting on the edge of my seat, hoping that this is where we were going. And then he said, you know, your allowance of grace is limited. And you never know when it's going to run out. And I'm kind of thinking, yeah, maybe we can still play with this. We, you know, it's never going to run out, so we're okay, you know. And he said, you never know when your allowance is going to run out. And therefore, you've got to work hard and be good all the time to please God. And that last sentence finished it for me. I was nearly out of my seat. There are about 1,200 people in the congregation of this church. And everything in me wanted to go down and grab the microphone off him and say, no! But I was good and didn't do it. I didn't want to dishonour my daughter and cause a fuss. And afterwards, my daughter said to me, she said, Daddy, she said, because she knew I was sitting there sort of steaming. She said, Daddy, she said, it's quite a nice church, but he does say some funny things sometimes. And I thought, well, as long as everybody knows their funny things. But I thought, what a terrible thing to say. You know, that the grace of God is limited, or the love of God is limited, you know, and how do you know when you're going to use up your allowance? Ugh. I mean, I would have used up mine years ago if it was limited, you know, but thankfully, it's not limited. The love of God is not limited. He cascades his love into our hearts, and he has more than enough for every single human being on this planet. So, you know, when we start the A schools, I tell people on the first evening, I said, there are two things I'm going to give you permission to do. And these are not things your parents would let you do. These are not things your teachers at school would let you do. But this week, you have my permission to do these two things. Number one, you are allowed to be greedy. You are allowed to take as much of this as you want. You can be greedy for the love of the Father, because you will not, you know, you will never exhaust his supply. And the second thing I say to people is, I say you can be greedy, and I say you can be selfish. Now, you don't tell your children to be selfish, do you? But I tell people on an A school, they can be selfish because all they need to do is think about themselves and what Father wants to do in their hearts, and, you know, not to worry about their neighbour or the person sitting next to them. We did a school, it was in Holland, actually, in the Netherlands a few years ago. And there was this married couple sitting there. And every session, the husband was tapping his wife on the shoulder. Have you got it yet, dear? Have you got it? And every session at the end, go forward for prayer, go forward for prayer. So on the second day, I went up to him. I said, she is never going to get it if you do that to her every time. Why don't you sit here and she sit over there? You know? And you know, what did I say to you on Sunday night? Be selfish. Just think of yourself, because, you know, this is an opportunity for you to receive what Father wants to do in your hearts. Now, thankfully, they didn't need to separate themselves in the room, but they did hear what I'd said. And they both started to receive for themselves. And, you know, she received a huge amount, and he did too. You know, but when we're worried about, oh, how's Mike doing? Is Mike getting, are you listening? Are you going to the meeting? You know, if we're worried about someone next to us or our family or our, you know, it's, one of the things I love about the A schools is when we do them as a residential school, because people have to come away from their families. But when it's a day one, they go home at the end of the day, they have to put the washing in the washing machine, they have to see how the kids have been at school, they have to help with the homework, they have to do the sandwiches for the next day. They have all these jobs, and then they come back to the school the next morning and think, now what were we talking about? But when it's residential, we can give that time to Father and say, Father, just do everything you want to do in my heart. And so I tell people, you know, be selfish and greedy and just go for as much of this as you can get. The only limiting factor of how much love you can receive is how much faith you have. Because it's be it unto your faith. According to your faith, be it unto you. And the more faith we have, and faith is a gift. I can't drum up faith. You know, I've tried, but faith is a gift that God gives us. And so I say, Father, will you give me that gift of faith so that I can receive all that you want to do in my heart? Because it really is the substance and the reality of the Father's love. When he pours his love into our hearts, he pours the substance of his heart into our heart. It is not nothing being poured into nothing. It is God's heart, the substance and the reality of his heart. And he is love being poured into our heart, into your heart, into my heart. And that is not dependent on anything. That's not dependent on how good you've been. It's not dependent on how hard you've worked. It's not dependent on whether you clean the car and cut the lawn this week. It's just not dependent on that. It's just based on the fact that he is your Father. And he wants to pour this extravagant love extravagantly into your heart. You know, John writes in 1 John, see how the Father has lavished his love on us. You know, lavished is another generous word. It's not, when I was at school and we had one of our house mistresses, house matrons, she would serve out the food. And there were maybe 10 or 12 people sitting on the table, and she would always cut, say if it was an apple pie, for the sake of argument, and there were 12 people on the table, she would cut it into 13 or 14 pieces. So everybody would get a piece, and then there was some left for seconds. But two pieces cut into 14 pieces is not a very big, you know, portion of seconds. And she wanted everybody to have some seconds. You know, I think we'd all have rather had a bigger first, you know. But it's like she would cut these two pieces or this one piece into minuscule pieces and pass it around. And we'd take this little crumb of apple pie and put it on our plate and think, where is it? You know, see, that's not how the Father lavishes his love upon us. He's not mean-spirited. He's overwhelmingly generous. And the love that he pours into our hearts, he lavishes upon us, which is a generous, abundant word. And, you know, his love has no limits. It never runs out. It never gives up. He never gets bored with us. You know, that's amazing, isn't it? He just loves us all the time, simply because he's our Father and we're our children. And, you know, I just really believe that this is what he wants to do, is to lavish his love upon us today, so that we would know that we're loved. See, that little video we just watched was all about coming home and being welcomed home. And I came home from a trip one time, and it was actually my 50th birthday. And I'd I always get the bus from Heathrow Airport back to Oxford, and then I get picked up in Oxford and get taken home. And so this time I came back from Uganda. I'd had a night flight, and I was just walking out of the arrivals at Terminal 5. And I'm just, you know, you're half asleep, you're dragging your suitcase, and I'm just walking along looking at all the people with all their signs, you know. And there's this girl, and my mind says, that's Francis. or my heart says, that's Frances, my daughter. And my head says, of course it isn't, because I'm getting the bus. And then I see another girl standing next to Frances, and I think, that's Hillary. And you know, I'm walking along with my case, and then I see this sign that says, happy birthday, Daddy. And I thought, oh, I've got a birthday. And then, you know, your mind sort of processes, those girls look like my daughters. I'm slow. I had a night flight. I hadn't had any sleep, you know. Those girls look like my daughters. They've got a sign saying, happy birthday, Daddy. And that lady standing behind them looks like my wife. You know? Oh, it's my family, you know. Fortunately, I didn't walk past them and get on the bus. I hope they might have stopped me had that been the case. But it was just like, oh, you know, suddenly I didn't feel tired anymore, you know. My family was there to welcome me home. And suddenly it made the coming home so much different. It was like, oh yeah, this is my family. These are the people I belong with. These are the people I love. And, you know, there was a really big sense that that day my heart came, you know, it was a homecoming. It was welcome home. And, you know, that video there, we saw, you know, them doing that thing, whatever you call it. And just singing to all those people, you know, welcome home, and the smiles that it put on people's faces, and, you know, just a bit of fun, but you could see everybody was going, oh yeah, we've had a night flight, but isn't this good, you know, this is fun and whatever. And that's what the Father wants to do for us. He wants to welcome us home. He wants to welcome us home. See, we go walkabout, don't we? You know, our hearts wander off on our own independent way. We do our own thing, and then suddenly we realise that life isn't going as well as maybe we thought it could. And it's because we've gone walkabout, and we need to come home. And the Father is always ready to welcome us home. You know, the story of Luke 15, which we know very well, is the two boys, the two sons. And, you know, one of them, the younger one, comes to his dad and says, Dad, give me my inheritance. Give me my share of your estate. You know, he was basically in that culture saying to his dad, I wish you were dead. Because he only would have got his inheritance when his father died. And in fact, in Deuteronomy, it tells us that if a son does that, he should be taken to the elders of the village and stoned. You know, that was how serious it was. But this boy comes to his dad and says, Dad, I want my inheritance. And, you know, I wouldn't have done what the father in the story did. But the father in the story gave him his inheritance. But he also gave the inheritance to the other son as well. Both sons received their inheritance. One of them knew he'd received it, and he went and wasted it. But the other one could never receive it. When the, you know, when the younger son comes back home and he's got his speech prepared, you know, I'll go home. He said, it's not much fun living in a pig pen. It's not much fun eating pig food. I'll go home and I'll say to my father, please, can I come back as a servant? Please, can I come back as a slave? And he's got this speech prepared, and he walks down the road, and his dad sees him and runs down the road to get him, throws his arms around him. The son starts his speech, and the father won't have any of it. It's like, shut up, be quiet, you know. Just come home. And the son was able to come home. And he received that welcome. He received the ring. He received the sandal. He received the best robe. You know, that best robe would probably have been the father's robe. You know, the best robe in the house would have been the father's sort of ceremonial robe. And he puts that robe around the stinking, smelly boy. Covers up his shame. Covers up his sin. And says, son, you belong. And he's able to come home, even though he's wasted his inheritance, even though he's spent all that money. And, you know, we don't know what he spent it on. All we're told is he spent it on wild living. And then the older son comes in and says, that son of yours. See, he can't even acknowledge that he's his brother. He says, that son of yours has been living it up with prostitutes. Well, how did he know that? You know, we're not told that. And the son, the older son, is angry. And the father says, no, he is my son, but he's also your brother. He said, that brother of yours has come home. See, he wants to restore relationship. The older son has put distance in the relationship. The older son has said, that's your son. Not my brother, that's your son. But the father says, no. He's your brother. And he wants to restore that relationship. And he says, he was dead, but is now alive. You know, how could we not throw a party? Because your son has come home. And the older son says, you didn't give me anything. You know, I've worked hard for you. I've slaved away on the farm. Actually, whose farm was it? It was probably his farm, because he'd been given his inheritance. My guess is, you know, it's only a story, of course, but probably the younger son had the cash and the older son had the farm. And this older son says, I've been working for you. I've been slaving away. I've been doing the right thing. And you never gave me anything. You didn't even give me a little goat to celebrate with my friends. Hang on. He'd been given his inheritance and he didn't know it. He'd been living with all this, like, it's like he was living with like all this money in the bank. Or he was living in this property, the title deeds were in his name, and he didn't know it. And the father says, why don't you come in and join the party? And we don't know what happened. We don't know how the older son responded, is left hanging. But you see, both of those boys needed a homecoming. Both of those boys needed to come home. One lived at home. The older son, he lived at home, he worked at home, but his heart was not home. His father was a master. He said, I've worked for you, I've slaved for you, I've done the right things, I've tried to be a good boy. In his heart, his dad was not his dad. In his heart, his dad was the master, the boss, the slave driver, the one who would not let him have any fun. He needed to come home. He needed to have the same embrace as his younger brother. And we don't know what happened, of course. The younger son, he realized what he'd done. He realized the error of his ways. I think he was actually hungry as well. But he came home, even though he came home initially wanting to be a servant. And many of us are like that, you know. We think, oh, well, we'll just come along and be a good servant. Our father wants to embrace us and say, no, you're not a servant, you're a son. In John chapter 8, Jesus says that a slave does not belong to the family forever. A slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to the family forever. And that's why in Luke 15, when that boy came home, he could be welcomed home because he was a son and he belonged to the family forever. And he received a homecoming. His heart came home. The next day, he could have gone into the centre of town and he could have acted on his father's behalf. He had that ring of authority on his finger. And he could have sat in the marketplace and he could have done business transactions as if it were his dad himself. Because he'd come home and he'd been received home. And his father said, you are my son. You're not a slave, you're not a servant, you're my son. You know, yes, you've gone walkabout. Yes, you've done your own thing, but you are my son. And he threw his arms around him and welcomed him home. And I believe that the father wanted to do that for the other son as well. I believe he wanted to throw his arms around his older son and say, son, you belong. You're my son. This is your home. This is your family. This is the place where you belong. But the older son, for whatever reason, he couldn't receive that. He couldn't come to that place of saying, my heart needs to come home. And so he remained living, as far as we know, as a slave in his father's house. When I was about 20 years old, our church had a youth camp, and I'm sure it's one of those mix and match weekends that churches do. But anyway, I went on it, and it was up in the Lake District, and we had a really good time, and it was great fun. But at the end of that, at the end of that week, one of the leaders came over to me, and he said one sentence that changed my life, but I didn't know what it meant for 20 years. He knelt down in front of me, and he put his hands on my shoulders, and he looked me in the eyes, and he said, "Mark, you've learned to be a servant, but God wants you to be a son." And something in me changed at that moment. And it was 20 years later, when I was sitting in Toronto listening to James Jordan speaking about the Father's love, that I knew what that statement meant. And I carried that prophetic statement in my heart for 20 years, knowing it was true, believing it was true, knowing that I was a son, but didn't know what it meant. And then suddenly I found out what it meant. And 6 months later, I thought I knew everything about the Father's love, only to realize that I know nothing, because there is so much more. If we ever think we've got it, all we've done is minimize it and brought it down to our level. There is no limit. You know, I've flown from Auckland in New Zealand to Los Angeles on the west coast of America, 13 hours flying, and all you do is fly over the ocean. You know, apart from a few little islands that you can't really see, but you're basically over the ocean. You know, and I feel like I'm just standing on the beach in Auckland, dipping my toe into this vast ocean of love. And, you know, I don't ever want to feel like I've got it, because I know all I'll have done then is minimized it and brought it to my level. See, our hearts need to come home. Our hearts need to come to that place where we can receive that embrace, where the Father can say to us, "You are my son, I love you. You are my daughter, I love you." Because that's when we receive the substance of his love, the substance of his heart being poured into our hearts. In a few moments, I've asked a few people to join me just to offer, to give you an opportunity to respond and for us to pray for you. And we're going to pray a very, very simple prayer. And if you don't mind, we're just going to ask if we can put our arms around you. And we're going to say, "Father, will you cause these arms to be your arms? And will you pour the substance of your love into your son or your daughter's heart?" And you can have as much as you want. It's not going to be a long prayer. It's just going to be a simple impartation that takes a few moments. But if you have faith in your heart that God the Father is going to touch you and pour the substance and the reality of his love into your heart, you can have as much as you believe for. Because it is a substance. It is a reality. You know, I don't love my wife theoretically. Can you put the projector on, Mike?
Yes.
I love my wife experientially. And so the Father wants to love us experientially. He wants us to know the substance and the reality of his love poured into our hearts. And so this very simple prayer is just a very simple but very, very powerful impartation. Paul gives us the invitation in Romans to receive the love of the Father being poured into our hearts, to receive the substance of his love being poured into our hearts. And I want to give us that opportunity, that invitation this afternoon, so that the Father can come to us. And just in those moments, we can know that the substance and the reality of his love is being poured into the depths of our heart. And then we can just, you know, we can keep saying, you know, all you have to do is put your hand on your heart wherever you are and say, "Father, fill me with your love." You can do it in the shops, you can do it in the car, as long as you keep your eyes open. You can do it walking around the house. You can just, "Father, fill me with your love now." And that's the prayer he loves to answer. I just want to play another little video, and then I just invite those who want to be prayed for. And then we'll have a tea break and then just the final session before we go. But let's just open our hearts as, you know, Father, just do everything you want to do in our hearts this afternoon. Father, this amazing love that we've been talking about, we want it to be poured into our hearts. We want the substance of your love to be poured into our hearts, Father. And Father, just as we watch this little video, just prepare our hearts to receive all that you want to do for us. Amen.